Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is June 26, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in eight cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, KL, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Byron Perry.
I'm Vim Shanmugam.
And I'm Somali.
So yeah, guys, circuit breaker or phase one or whatever it was has been done for about a week. Or is it 2 weeks now? I think it's 2 weeks.
I've lost count.
Have you guys visited a restaurant? Is it just 1 week?
Yeah, it's 1 week.
1 week, yeah.
Right?
I don't know, man. Time is a social construct. It's not real.
No, you're right. It's been about like 2 weeks because like it started on like 15th was, sorry, like 12 at night was like when they sort of, yeah, like
phase two. Yeah, it was started. A Friday night.
Yeah, it was after ISO date. So, yeah, it was
2 weeks. Or wait, no, it was a week ago. Because it was the last ISO date episode?
Yeah. Yeah, wasn't the last ISO date like on the 12th? No?
Yeah.
Oh man.
No. It was the last week. Last week was the last ISO date episode. So that's when the phase one ended.
Okay. Okay.
And so more importantly, have you guys been out to a restaurant to eat?
No, I'm scared. I'm gonna be real with you.
Still no? Wow. No.
I went yesterday for the first time. Because my mom wanted to go eat something, so I just went with her. But we went to Grub. No shameless plug, but it's somewhere in a park in Singapore, and there weren't a lot of people there, which was nice. Mm-hmm. And we sat outside, and there is, you know, the safe entry thing, and you got to take your temperature. But yeah, we obviously like didn't share anything. I wiped down like all the silverware, flatware, yeah. Where I used it. But I think it's not ideal, but there, as we were leaving, there were a lot of people coming in. So yeah, I think people are slowly like coming back, but we've so far seen a lot of like kind of stupidity as well, though, like with people going out.
What's happened? Oh, there was like the crowd of people in Holland Village, right? Outside a restaurant, and apparently actually I heard from either Grab or Gojek driver, I can't remember which one, who said that the first Friday night was an absolute shit show in Holland Village, and like there was a fight and there was major crowds and some person drank themselves into the hospital and had to be taken away in an ambulance.
Oh gosh.
This is it. I just heard this. I have no clue what is true, but yeah. I did see in the news that there was big crowds in Holland Village, and one restaurant had to close. The police came and closed it because of how crowded it was outside.
Yeah.
So I think that was a lot of pent up demand for getting shit faced, I guess.
Yeah, I saw a few videos, like viral videos of people like fighting, and they were all drunk and just, you know, kind of out of control. So
nature is returning to the wild.
Absolute mayhem, and yes, nature is returning. Anyways, on to our top stories. This week in Bangkok, the Thai government extended the emergency decree until August. Mm. So this was kind of big news in Thailand. Thailand has done a really good job of controlling the coronavirus, but apparently they want to extend their emergency decree, which gives the government special powers, until August. It's been in place since March 26th. And critics have said that officials are exploiting the pandemic to keep emergency powers in place at a time of rising public dissatisfaction, i.e. maybe kind of suppressing protests, which are a huge political tool in Thailand, as probably anybody who knows much about Thailand knows. So, interesting news there that, you know, this emergency decree is being extended. In other news in Thailand, sex massage parlors may be reopening soon, which is good news, I suppose, for folks who like to visit sex massage parlors. Unfortunately, though, for those who might want to keep things anonymous, the Thai government spokesman who said that sex massage parlors will be opening soon or will be okay to open soon said that they will need to log all visitors with the government's Thailand WINS tracking system.
That's amazing.
And other rules for the sex massage parlors include frequent cleaning, temperature screening, mask wearing, social distancing. But you don't need to social distance when, quote unquote, bathing.
Well, are the masks on? I have so many questions.
Yeah, I think this is like video potential. We need to do an investigative story on this.
Please do that.
Well, I have a question. Like, are sex massage parlors like legally accepted by the government, or like, I guess they are if they have to like kind of report and, you know, do safe entry and tracing and all that stuff.
Okay, so this is a very interesting. It's a great question and a very interesting thing that I think, I don't want to get in trouble here, but really kind of encapsulates some of the inherent contradictions in Thailand, I guess, in terms of the way things work. Prostitution is illegal. Prostitution is illegal. It's definitely illegal. But then the government will say things like sexual massage parlors can open, and there's like government rules governing prostitution. So, I think that is the core inherent contradiction right there. And I want to double check, but prostitution, pretty sure it's illegal. But anybody who's been to any kind of big city or tourist area of Thailand also knows that there are massive red light districts with very visible open prostitution right next to, you know, the most important business districts and government offices. And so, it's technically illegal, but in practice, totally legal.
Well, when you have a market, I mean, it's just supply and demand, no?
Yes. Big supply, big demand. I know that I was also looking at another coconut story we wrote recently that obviously the sex industry has been quite affected by the pandemic. And I believe it's a very large percentage of Thailand's overall GDP that is contributed from the sex industry. It's something like a few percent, like 5%, something like that. It's a massive industry in Thailand, but it's technically illegal, but it's practically legal. And
I think we can safely say that with the contact tracing, even though they're open, they're not really open. Like, no one's going to go, I don't think.
I think we can safely say they're not going to do that.
Brothels.
I don't know. It's not Singapore. The enforcement of rules, as I just said, is often a lot different from what the actual rules are. But let's see. Who knows? Maybe they will.
Well, speaking of sex, let's move over to the Philippines, where they expect almost 2 million Filipino kids to be born in 2021 due to the lockdown. One Antonio III, this executive director of the Commission on Population and Development, basically said that like during this lockdown period, a lot of people didn't have access to contraception, and you know, family planning was sort of family planning basically took a back seat because access to it was much more difficult. You couldn't get family planning supplies at hospitals due to that not being a priority while they were treating COVID-19. So next year, they expect about 2 million children to be born.
Wow. That's a lot.
We have space.
Philippines, I'm pretty sure its overall population is like 100 million. So that's like 2% in 1 year. Boom. Increase.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to give you guys like context, like in 2018, there were about 1.7 million births.
So I guess it's not that abnormal.
Yeah, it's not too crazy. But still, you know, that's like two million more people, all of a sudden popping up. So it's gonna be an interesting time. I feel like this is not gonna be just indicative of just being in the Philippines. I feel like this might be the case in across the world, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
What else is there to do once you're locked down with your
knocking the boots? But the Philippines does, to be fair, have very unfortunately poor family planning processes in place, and one of the reasons for that is that it's very, very Catholic. There's a lot of not a lot of contraception, or lower amounts of contraception, lower amounts of abortion, whatever you think about that. And so a lot of families have many, many children. And funny thing about the Philippines too, talking about interesting laws in our countries, I'm pretty sure Philippines is one of the only countries in the world where divorce is still illegal. Divorce is technically illegal in the Philippines.
Well, can you get, like, I don't know, put in jail for that at all? What are the repercussions?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You gotta marry again. You gotta get another wife or husband.
Well, for real, like, what is the time frame? Like, if you don't do it in 2 weeks, I'm gonna push you off a cliff. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm seeing February 2020 in The Economist, why the Philippines is the only country where divorce is illegal. So, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's still the case. I don't think people are getting arrested in mass, but it just shows how strong the Catholic Church is there, because that's a Catholic thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, over in Hong Kong, going gone. Victoria's Secret closes their flagship Causeway Bay store and they exit the Hong Kong market for good. Good riddance, my friend. Okay, so yeah. They have closed
the... Bye, Felicia.
Uh-huh. Bye, Victoria. What was your secret? We don't care. So yeah, they have closed the doors of their 5-story flagship store. And they've let go of their staff overnight. Like, was it done in a text? Is this like, what, the equivalent of a breakup text? I do not know. Yeah, so according to Apple Daily, a notice was put up outside the 50,000 square feet store early on Thursday. And it said, "We regret to inform you that we have closed the Victoria's Secret flagship store at Causeway Bay in Hong Kong. And you will still be available to shop online on our website." I'm not going to repeat, no free promo. "We thank you for your support and look forward to serving you online." But yeah, I don't know. Good riddance. And yeah, they opened this store in 2018, and okay, 2 years is good enough. Please go.
Oh, wow. So it's pretty new. I didn't realize how big it is, too. 5 stories.
Yeah, dude, that is so much space.
Causeway Bay is like the Times Square of Hong Kong. Yeah, fuck Victoria's Secret. I'm just going to come and say it.
Is that the only one? Is that the only one in Hong Kong? They say like flagship. Does that mean there's like other ones in there?
Exiting Hong Kong market. So yeah. I don't know, Summer, what does it say? But if there's other stores, it sounds like they're probably closing too. I think Victoria's Secret has just really pushed this body image that is so unhealthy on women around the world. And I think it's really not in step with the prevailing attitudes of our times that have really changed over the last few years. And yeah, it's just, in my opinion, Summer, you tell me what you think as our token Gen Z rep, but like, yeah, it's just not cool anymore. It's totally lame. Aspiring to be like that isn't cool. I remember seeing Fenty, Rihanna's brand, like lingerie came out and, you know, there was plus size women and transgenders and amputees and all different races and creeds under the sun. And that was so refreshing. And like that, it was like, that is what is cool now.
Exactly.
Victoria's Secret, not so cool.
Yeah, this dude, Ed Rezek, whatever, he was the CEO. And then, yeah, he made like transphobic comments. He was like, because people kept asking him, like, why won't you like include plus size women and like transgender people in your freaking shows? And then he said, we're trying to sell a fantasy. And now it literally is a fantasy because we can't even see it.
Yeah. It was a fantasy. It's just a fantasy for fucking horny freak dudes.
Intolerable people too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know any women, any of my friends would ever buy, have bought Victoria's Secret stuff. Actually, that's kind of, I'm trying to think, like, I mean,
because obviously everyone's buying Fenty. It's okay. Don't hurt your low brain. It's okay.
Yeah. And the founder, or I believe the founder, the guy Les, I'm blanking on his, it's something like Wexler or something like that.
Yeah.
American guy.
Yeah.
Him and Epstein were best buddies, and Epstein managed his money. Would say one of the things he would tell women who he preyed on was that he was a Victoria's Secret like talent scout. Mm-hmm. So it was just a totally, well, it still exists, but I think it's really doing poorly everywhere in the world. It's just, it's cool to see. It's gone out very fast and it's like incredibly uncool. So yeah, goodbye, Victoria. We will never know what your secret was, but frankly, we don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm. Especially with somebody do Epstein. Yuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the secret. That was the secret.
Oh!
Ooh, maybe that. Maybe Victoria's Secret was Jeffrey Epstein's pedophile island and web of disgusting behavior, which he was ultimately arrested for. Yeah, maybe that's a secret.
Oh, Lord.
Moving on to Myanmar, our top story of the week was a big original feature, really interesting and quite different from the type of stories that we normally do. It's about a civil war that is brewing in Western Myanmar, Rakhine State, which historically has been very well known globally for the horrific Rohingya ethnic cleansing and the driving out of the Rohingya by the Burmese army. But there's actually another conflict in this state, which is between what is called the Arakan army, which is mainly comprised of Buddhists who are fighting against the Tatmadaw, which is the Burmese army. Let me just read you an excerpt from this in-depth feature story, which was written by freelancer Edward Crowley. While the world's attention is focused on COVID-19, war is brewing in the jungles of Western Myanmar. The Arakan Army, or AA, was formed just a few years ago by students, workers, and farmers, but has learned the ruthless tactics of guerrilla warfare quickly. Major General Tuan Mrat Nang, its commander, aspires to no less than forging a new nation. My personal dream, he said, is to see our national flag at the Olympic Games and to hear our national anthem sung. So a little bit of background on the AA as well. In January 2019, the Burmese military officially designated the AA as a terrorist organization, and the government followed suit this past March after ceasefire talks broke down. President U Win Myint declared the group a danger to law and order, citing attacks against the military, police, and security outposts that include allegations of torture and assassination. Evidence on the ground in Rakhine State tells a different story. There, as in other areas of Myanmar, complaints portray the Tatmadaw, and that's the Burmese military, like an occupying army. In May, witnesses said they saw soldiers enter the Let Kar community before gunfire and flames broke out. Human Rights Watch estimated that at least 200 homes were put to the torch, much in the same way Rakhine's ethnic Rohingya villages were destroyed. So yeah, really fascinating story. Not a fun story, but civil war seems to be brewing in Western Myanmar, this place that has had so much conflict. And you can go to Coconuts Yangon to give this feature a read.
Wow, intense. That's pretty intense.
From Victoria's Secret, joking, although that was to civil war in Myanmar. But yeah, Myanmar is such a fascinating country, and I don't know how much you guys know, but there's all along the border, there's kind of low-level civil war. And this is on the western border with Bangladesh. But on the northern and eastern borders, like Shan State and Karen State, I believe, with China and Thailand, there's been civil wars that have gone on for decades. And those areas are kind of lawless or kind of more controlled by the warlords of that area than the central government. It's where a lot of the drugs throughout Asia and the world are produced, especially methamphetamines and heroin. So interesting stuff. And from time to time, we cover this restive region in the borderlands of Myanmar, and it's always super fascinating.
Mm. From Victoria's Secret to war to something else, to hippies.
To hippies.
To hippies. The founder of a Bali spiritual community group, House of Om, Wissam Barake, had his temporary stay permit revoked because he had a massive spiritual getaway where basically a whole bunch of foreigners turned up and did not abide to any of the social distancing rules and caused a whole bunch of commotion in the area. The activity did not receive any official approval by the local traditional village, and the event has been suspended because of COVID-19 protocols, said Jamaruli Manirok, head of the Ministry of Law and Human Rights in the province. Yeah, so...
Oops. Yeah. I'm guessing this was in Ubud, although I could be wrong, but Ubud is the spiritual center of Bali.
It's in the Ganyar Regency.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's Ubud.
Okay.
Yeah, not the best idea. The photos are showing a lot of people in what looks like a really cool treehouse, like bamboo, big hut thing, but packed together, chanting, singing, breathing, no masks. Yeah, wasn't a good idea. And now this guy seems to be getting deported. Hashtag oops.
House of Om cluster, like, has a nice ring to it, just saying.
House yeah. Let's hope it's not one of those super spreader events. It's like, oh, yeah, 200 people went to this House of Om thing, and now, like, 100 have COVID.
Yay.
I think the event drew about, like, 60 people, although, like, the photo itself looks as though all 60 people are in that photo.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it is, like, in Ubud, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I like how they use, like, the fisheye lens as well, like, just to let you know that everyone was in attendance. Thank you for that. Thank you so much. We'll just send this to authorities.
It was used as evidence, I think. Mm-hmm. Oops, when you get in trouble for promoting your own thing on social media. Again, we've talked about this before. It's just, it's so rich.
Mm-hmm. Just to switch gears a little bit, you know, from Victoria's Secret to war to, like, the House of Om to back to Singapore. Mm-hmm. It's election time. Yay.
Yay, so, elections.
Yay. So yeah, our Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong has formally called for a general election to take place during an address to the nation the other day. But yeah, so he had met with our President Halimah Yacob to advise her to dissolve parliament and issue the writ of election. And he noted that under the constitution, the next general election must take place no later than April 2021, which is less than a year away. So might as well. But yeah, so the leader of the People's Action Party has ruled without interruption since the nation gained independence. And yeah, he said he decided to call for elections while things are relatively stable, adding that there was no assurance that the pandemic would be over before the current government's term ends.
Hmm.
What do we think about this?
Yeah, big news. Parliament dissolved. I think they already have the date, July 10th. So it's like in 2 weeks. It's always for me, as an American and a foreigner living in Singapore, been so fascinating how fast the elections are that, you know, there was no campaigning and no talk of an election. And now it's in like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And honestly, yeah. I think it's kind of great because I hate how long the election like campaigns are in the US, like the 2 year horse race slog. It really should be shorter.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and this is accompanied by other news that Lee Hsien Loong's brother joins the Progress Singapore Party. Oh my god, we got drama. Keeping up with the Lees. Okay.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, baby.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Which part?
Yeah, I mean, that's big. For those who don't quite follow what that means, that is the brother of the prime minister. Opposing him and joining an opposition party, and both being the sons of, I think, Lee Kuan Yew, who is the founder of modern day Singapore. Can I say that? Or how would I describe Lee Kuan Yew? Prime Minister for many, many years and the founder of modern day Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the equivalent of like Jaime Lannister joining the Starks.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Yeah, you're right. That's absolutely game going.
Just for the let me see, doing head math, mental gymnastics. Yeah, I guess that works, sort of.
And yeah, and like, remember that territorial, okay, not, was it, I don't know if it's considered territorial dispute, but there was Lee Kuan Yew's house that they had a dispute over all three Lee siblings. Like, Lee Kuan Yew wanted the house to be demolished, like, when he died.
Mm.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Lee Hsien Loong didn't want to. And then like there was just this like giant public spat between the three siblings. And yeah, this is like part two, you know, like keeping up with the Lee season two. Stay tuned.
A bit cringy for that to be litigated out in the open. I don't remember what actually happened, but I don't believe it's been torn down. Or am I totally wrong?
I have no idea. Like, yeah, I need to keep up with the Lees as well. I will tune in.
Yeah, that's the original house, right? Like at Oxley?
Yeah.
Oxley Road.
It's a really cool house. I was just like, don't tear it down. It's a cool house. It's like one of those original, I think they're good class bungalows, have this very unique architectural style. That was my motivation for thinking, just leave it up. It's a really cool place.
Mm. It's kind of cute. And yeah, and in other election news, there's an LGBT group that has ranked Singaporean politicians for their support.
Mm.
So there's like a whole scorecard and everything, but and this was done by Seoni, who has launched a new research which archives politicians' public views on LGBTQ issues in the past 10 years, from 2011 to 2020. And yeah, Law and Home Affairs Minister K. Shanmugam was first among 27 Singaporean politicians ranked for their position on LGBT matters in a scorecard. And yeah, this dude earned a full score of 5 and an A grade. While the opposite end of the spectrum, fellow People's Action Party member Vivian Balakrishnan earned a negative 4 score and an F grade in the assessment conducted by the group advocating for queer women's rights. And yeah, falling shortly behind Shanmugam was Singapore's 10th Parliament Speaker Tan Chuan Jin and Reform Party Chief Kenneth Jayaratnam. Mm. Oh, they're being scored like a report card, y'all.
This is great. Yeah. I think that's very cool. And I don't actually know what Shanmugam has done to be so
high.
Yeah, highly ranked. Do you guys know? Because I've heard him, you know, the main thing I've heard him say is, you know, that I think about the law here that criminalizes homosexuality. I thought I've heard him be in support of that law. I mean, he's the attorney general. He's the law and home affairs minister. But do you guys know?
I don't know. I would think that maybe the bar may be a bit low, but to get an A, I don't know where it stands. But yeah. So he has publicly denounced violence against LGBTQ. So that is so far the only evidence. But yeah. Good job, man. Dude did that.
That is a pretty low bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, like so, literally like...
He said, don't kill and beat up gay people. Wow. So come I pop for you.
Give it up.
you got to do the Singapore way. Come I clap for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good job.
But yeah, I think like it's a very low bar in general. And I think, yeah, like what Summer just said, like it's just basically like he's spoken to LGBTQ groups and he realizes that there are LGBTQ people.
Yeah,
and they should not. Yeah, there shouldn't be violence towards them, and there are challenges faced by them. But beyond that, he's done nothing. Like he hasn't, you know, there hasn't been like open conversation about trying to, you know, obviously that's why we have the pink dot every year. You know, that pink dot I feel like has become, unfortunately, like just a event that, you know, the parliament sees, the government sees, and just moves on. Like it's just a day that this is their day. This is a day for them, quote unquote them. And that's it. Like, you know, nothing is moved forward for that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we allow you to have this event. There we go. Gay rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There's this like a petition going around as well, saying that they don't want the pink dot, which has historically been held in Hong Lim Park every year in June during Pride Month. And now it's definitely had to move online because we care about social distancing and health. So people are saying that, oh, now this protest is moving outside of the park, so we need to shut that down. Don't let it into our home and workspaces. Shut up. That is now both your home and your home. So it's a live stream you tune into. Shut up.
I think Singapore is really on the wrong side of this issue, frankly. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too in-depth into it, but... I believe and I hope that things are going to be changing soon because attitudes have already changed, I think, so much amongst young people and even middle-aged people. Singapore has a very vibrant LGBTQ community that are very out and open. And Pink Dot is one of their, you know, main expressions and shows of protest and but still nothing actually happens in terms of the fact that, for those who don't know, there is a law that's been around forever in Singapore. I think it's a remnant of British colonial law that criminalizes specifically, I think, gay sex.
Between men.
Yeah.
That's a weird part.
Yeah. So that needs to be removed. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that. Should we cut this?
Yeah, man. Might get pop-mart.
No, I think it's a fair thing to say. Like, you know.
You guys mentioned before, this will be your first, both you, Vim, and Summer, your first times voting, yeah?
Mm.
Excited?
Yay. Very excited. Yeah.
I think I'll probably have to do a lot more research about the people in my constituency. Because, like, I have no idea who's like my MPs or who's running in my area. So I'll probably have to do a lot more homework and kind of make the right decision there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think it's exciting news in Singapore. It's going to be very compressed, you know.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing, like I said, about this very short campaign period. It's really intense. So every day there will probably be some new, relatively big news story that comes out. And of course, we will continue to cover it on Coconut Singapore. Moving on, guys, we were talking earlier about, for those that don't know, we've had our Coco Chats series on our Instagram account, taking advantage of the very cool Instagram live chat feature where two accounts can have a broadcast live conversation. Our most recent Coco Chat was between Eugene, our Coconuts KL associate editor in KL, and a sugar baby in Malaysia. I forget her name. I think it was Anna.
Yeah, Anna, yeah.
But yeah, Anna, who publicly came on our Coco Chat and spoke about sugar dating, i.e. dating very often older men in a scenario where there may be some cash or goods changing hands in exchange for that dating and time spent with the sugar daddy. You can listen to a few key highlights from that chat about sugar baby dating in Malaysia right now.
Hey guys, so this is Anna from Sugar Book. She's a sugar baby and she'll be talking to us about the life of a sugar baby. Thanks for joining us today.
No worries. Yeah. This is something I would like to share with more people. Yeah.
Okay,
because I'm enjoying my lifestyle as a sugar baby. Really? Yes.
Oh, okay. So what does being a sugar baby mean to you?
Sugar baby is where you support financially by your sugar daddies. Mm-hmm. And where you can, you know, just enjoy finer things in life. Where someone much, maybe older, generous guy, they give you reward as in exchange of your companionship. Not necessary for only young girls, not necessarily. Because we do have members from some divorcees, single mom.
So yeah. Anyone can be a sugar baby and anyone can be a sugar baby.
As long as you can be presentable and confident with yourself, that's what matters the most.
Normally, like you mentioned, sugar daddies, they're not necessarily old men, so
yeah,
like what are they, like what are their age?
In my case, I have sugar daddies too. Both of them are 32 years old. They're not old that
oh
much.
They're not old.
They look hot, to be honest. They look hot.
Oh.
And they're generous. That's it.
So she's a sugar baby. She talked about being a sugar baby. What did you guys think of that chat? It was pretty interesting, huh?
Good for her. I'm taking notes.
Yeah, I mean, I found it quite fascinating. The whole situation with her and sugar daddies and and how she's like sort of, and she also spoke about like how like she's doing it because she had her heart broken and she felt like she wasn't getting enough value out of regular relationships. And that's why she felt that, you know, a more of a transactional relationship where things are very clear and defined help her and help her partners as well. I think she had like two sugar daddies at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
How did you get started on sugar dating?
Because previously I had bad experience in my relationship, normal dating relationship. So I decided to try this type of relationship whereby I went to the Google first. And then I typed online dating. And then I have this one site actually. It's for sugar baby too. And I tried it for, I think it lasts for only 3 months.
Oh.
Then I met about 3 to 4 guys in there. But there, I can say there is a type of what we call salt daddy.
Oh, okay.
Salt daddy? What? Yeah. Okay, let me explain to you what is salt daddy.
Okay,
salt
guys, we're gonna learn about what is a salt daddy versus
okay.
sugar daddy.
Yeah. Salt daddy is a guy where they only want your companionship, and then they actually not ready financially to invest in you. You get what I mean?
So they're not, I mean, they just want something from you, but they don't want to invest in you?
Yes. I mean, maybe they would want to invest to you, but in a small amount.
So they're not very generous?
They're not very generous.
Okay. How has sugar dating changed your life?
Sugar dating actually changed my mind a lot in the way of how I think and get the bigger picture of this relationship, you know, because as I mentioned earlier, I have previous bad experience in my relationship whereby in sugar dating, you will date a guy, but you will not get, you know, consumed physically and mentally. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So you have this relationship where you are just stress-free without any expectation because, you know, they give you reward.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't... Because before I joined Sugarbook, I shifted my mindset to actually to not get emotional attached with the sugar daddies.
Emotional investment.
Yes. So, you know, I don't want to get hurt again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I also learned about salt daddies. Did you guys know about the salt daddy?
No, I didn't see that part. What is a salt daddy? Tell me.
Yeah, because like when she like dropped that, I was like, wait, whoa, what's a salt daddy? So like, essentially, like it's someone who sort of basically pretends to be sort of really rich or well off, but essentially just like dates like mostly like younger women. Like her attractive younger women, but don't really have a lot of things to give her or support her. So I'm like, wait, like a relationship?
so they want to clear, but they're pretending to be a sugar daddy, right? Like they're trying to.
Yeah, they're sort of like posery kind of guys who want to live that lifestyle, but don't want to like invest like financially in the partner.
Can I be your sugar daddy, but I don't want to give you any money or buy anything for you or no?
Yeah,
I think that's probably what they're trying to steer clear of if they're looking for sugar daddy relationships.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. He's after free sugar. What a salty boy.
Mm. Yeah, salty. Yeah. I saw, so Anna joined the Coco Chat on the account of the Sugar Book, which we don't want to promote that, but it is the where she, you know, joined us from. And the Sugar Book is an app that facilitates these types of arrangements. And so I checked out that account and I saw they had some posts about the numbers of sugar babies in Singapore. Mm. And I was really surprised. Did anybody see that? It was like they ranked the universities in Singapore by the number of sugar babies.
Oh, was it NTU? I'm just thinking now.
Yeah,
they got
I think
a
it was NTU.
Hey, good for y'all.
I don't know.
How do I apply to become a sugar baby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Number of sugar baby signups from Singaporean universities on the rise. 643. This was in March. Mm. The top university was NTU.
Yes.
Then SM, Singapore Institute of Management. Then NUS, number three, which I guess is surprising because isn't NUS kind of the most prestigious university in Singapore, maybe?
They're probably all like more nerdy though. They're probably like learning, trying to study. Versus...
You think?
I don't know.
I don't know how many sugar daddies are looking to study with their sugar baby, but maybe.
I said this is like the number of sugar babies in each university. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So okay. So the Sugar Book says. So take it with a grain of salt, and who knows? You know. I guess they're getting this data from their own app. But yeah, it does seem like, I think that's one of the things I have been surprised about is there seems to be a movement of people being more public about it. Mm-hmm. Like this lady, Anna, who has, you know, joined our Cocoa Chat and showed her face. And yeah, what do you think, Summer? Like, is this, are you hearing of friends doing stuff like this? And I think it's, I don't know what to think about it, frankly. I think it's, if everybody's happy in the arrangement, I see no issue with it. And get that money.
Yeah, man, if there is consent, good for you. Textbooks are expensive. NTU is real far away. Somebody needs to pay for the grab trip there. Yes. Do you, sis? Get the bag.
Absolutely.
Mm.
I guess, like, it kind of brings you to, like, Thailand, right? Like, I mean, like, for me, a lot of people go to Thailand because older dudes, they're well off, but maybe they're retired or divorced. And they end up, like, finding, I mean, this is the cliched story, but, you know, they end up finding a younger Thai lady who she needs, you know, like, some financial security, whether to help her family or whatever it might be. And he needs companionship. Sometimes it's not even sexual. It's, you know, it's just like someone to talk to and hang out with when you're there, someone to take care of. And I guess, like, it kind of works for both people.
Yeah.
Like, you know? Yeah. Okay. And yeah, exactly what Summer said. Like, if there's consent, everyone's sort of safe and respectful, then yeah, to each his own.
Yeah, man. And I heard from a friend's friend that somebody got paid $400 to take a nap with her sugar daddy. Okay, see, I sleep for free. So, like, how do I get it on this?
Getting paid to nap doesn't better.
Yeah, there was no sexual
next
stuff.
Next to a creepy guy, but cool. Yeah.
$400,
slight,
man.
Slight asterisk. It was also very interesting. I did catch this part of the chat with Anna that she, and again, maybe we take this with a grain of salt, but she talked about how, like, all of her sugar daddies were very young and attractive and wealthy. You would think maybe they don't need to have sugar babies if that's the case, but who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, the stereotype you have of a sugar daddy is going to be an old, not unattractive, fat, rich dude who, you know, has five sugar babies around him to go to his yacht party. I guess that's my stereotype. Not a young, attractive man.
What is that Instagram dude, Dan Bilzerian?
Yes.
Like, I feel like that might be like the sugar daddy type that she's talking about. I don't know whether it's reality, but
yeah. That guy's a fucking psycho.
There's this question. Are sugar daddies not good-looking guys who have money but want beautiful girls as companions?
I wouldn't say no. Some, yes. Because, you know, when they have money, it's not weird after their money, but if they're paying for your companionship, why not? Why not, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, it's like a job, right?
Because they are not good looking, actually. Because they are wealthy men. They have image, like this businessman type of image. They have to take care of their grooming as well. So yeah, they're all good looking. Maybe they're all older men. But they are smart, sleek, and well-groomed, I can say.
Okay, I mean, obviously there are people outside the sugar dating world and they will view it as like something like prostitution. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you think of that?
Well, people will always have things to say, you know? So just enjoy the finer things in life. You know what? Mm-hmm. Because sex is not the main goal for sugar dating. I will not pick pointing anyone, like you can choose whatever lifestyle you wanted to have, but I would not say that word. Okay, just like sugar dating, that's why we have this sugar book apps whereby you don't have to bother to be in the streets, you know, to find customers.
Right, it's easy.
Yeah, and all the members in a sugar book apps, they're legit, successful men, you know? They're wealthy men. And they took care of themselves very well. And, you know, you have the least chances to expose to sex disease. Sex disease. Yeah? because they are businessmen. You know, they don't have time to actually play around with women. So they just stick to this. Yeah, so they just stick to this one sugar babies that whom they can connect really well. And if not, they're not compatible, then they have to end it. So, so apart from the prostitution, I think in sugar dating, like sugar baby, they have this type, this standard.
Yeah.
Yes, where they have this power of choice. See, see? So when you, like I said earlier, like if you don't match with this guy, you don't have to do it. It's okay. Yeah. Move on. Move on. Find another guy that you can match and connect.
Do you have any advice for people who want to, or people who want to go into sugar dating?
Try.
Yeah.
Okay. First, you know, just give it a try first. That's what I do. Give it a try. Then you will have this sense of whether you are comfortable with this lifestyle or not. So if you think that you are ready with sugar babies, then first you have to firm with your expectation first, and then be confident, and don't, like I said, don't expect attention.
Yeah,
it's hard actually, but you need to negotiate. You need to master the art of negotiation.
Oh,
it takes time, but I will assure you, you will have great times. You know, that experience where the, at first, I was like, you know, I cannot set my price because, okay, am I selling? Am I an item? Why I have to set the price? So then I realized that you have to, because members in Sugarbook, they will not put a certain amount. They will not come up to a certain amount. They will let you do the
price.
Yes, that's it. We have the power of choice. The choice of, I'm sorry, yeah, the power of choice.
Power of choice, right? Choosing, setting your price.
Yes.
What about sugar daddy? What's your advice for them?
But you need to be reasonable with your price also. You don't have to be over the top, actually. Just refer to your lifestyle. If you have high budget lifestyle, then set a certain amount according to your lifestyle. For me, I'm just an average girl. Yeah. But I will. I will be high maintenance one day. One day. By the way, I'm 22. Maybe,
oh.
Yes. 22. Maybe at the age of 25.
Yeah.
But yeah, we actually did a feature short doc about sugar babies in Malaysia in 2018 for our show for iFlix, Coconuts TV on iFlix. And I learned a lot about that when we were doing that as well. All the sugar babies... yeah, that we interviewed and sugar daddies didn't want to show their face in that case. But the sugar daddy we interviewed, he was a young guy, young Malaysian guy. And yeah, I guess maybe it's something about they're really just willing to people who are sugar daddies who are interested in having sugar daddy relationships like this. It's just, it did seem to be a lot about the image for this guy and the ease. Just like, yeah, I can just be surrounded by beautiful women at all times because I have money, which I want. Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. But we definitely saw a little bit of the other side with one young lady that we interviewed who was about to go on her, I believe, her very first sugar daddy date.
Mm.
And she was super nervous and it was a little bit heartbreaking. But she was excited too. And she had met the guy and, you know, she was like, I'm excited, but I'm also really nervous. And I'm, you could tell that she was probably maybe a little bit morally torn, but excited about potentially going on dates and spending a weekend with this guy. Maybe excited about the potential financial. income that she could make from this, but also nervous and a little bit scared too. So I think that's the other side of these types of situations. Anyhow, you can check out that video on our YouTube channel. What was it called? Give Me Some Sugar is the little title we had of that short doc. And you can check out the full Coco Chat with Anna on our Instagram account, which is very simple, at Coconuts. And yeah, I think that's it for today, guys.
Yay. Long week of all kinds of stuff. Very diverse stuff stories.
Yeah, diverse. Civil War in Myanmar, NBD, Victoria's Secret, goodbye. Yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a wonderful upcoming week. As always, we really ask for your support as Coconuts fans and readers and listeners. If you would like to become a Coco Plus member, you can go to coconuts.co/membership. You can also make a one-time patron payment if you prefer to do that at coconuts.co/patron. And we are selling very cool white Coconuts brand t-shirts on our Teespring page. We've actually also created t-shirts for every single city. So we now have t-shirts for Coconuts Bangkok, Coconuts Singapore, Coconuts KL, etc. If you want to rep your local city. So yeah, guys, we'll talk next week.
Bye.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Byron Perry, Vim Shunmugam, and Summer Lee. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez.